We've heard a great deal now about the predicament that the world is in. And it is time to turn to a different emphasis and to begin to consider what can and must be done to respond to this threat. Professor Daniel Pipes will speak about Israel and clear victory. He is one of the foremost spokesmen on these issues in the United States and around the world, the director of Middle East Forum, which seeks to define and promote American interests in the Middle East, defining U.S. interests that include fighting radical Islam in all its manifestations, violent and nonviolent, stealthy and open, working for Palestinian acceptance of Israel, improving the management of U.S. democracy efforts, and related matters. Dr. Pipes is a former official of the U.S. Department of State and has taught in many American universities, including the U.S. Naval War College and Harvard University. Author of 12 books on the Middle East, he's received 2 presidential appointments and has served on 5 presidential campaigns. How many won? In any case, it's a long battle, and please welcome Daniel Pipes.
Yes, American presidential candidates will always lose if I'm the advisor. This round I was an advisor to Rudolph Giuliani. I'd like to thank Dr. Belknap and the organizers of this conference for this important event. I'd like to begin slightly off topic. My topic is the Arab-Israeli conflict, but I'd like to make an initial statement about Islam and radical Islam. Note that there are 3 interpretations in the West of who the enemy is. One is terrorism, the second is Islam, and the third is radical Islam. Now, I doubt there are any representatives of the first viewpoint in this audience today. Well, anyway, among the speakers. But we divide the speakers between our interpretation of Islam as the problem and radical Islam as the problem. We agree on the enemy and disagree on the solution. It's an important disagreement. I'm not going to go into the details, it's not my topic. But I think it's very important that those of us who disagree, whether it's Islam or the form of Islam, do so respectfully and congenially, because we are allies, we are friends. And we need to keep that always in mind. We're not so numerous and so strong that we can afford to fight and waste time, internecine debates or harm. Debates are fine, but doing damage to each other. It's important that we work together. I am of the school that's radical Islam, but I believe it's important to have a full bearing, and I respect those who are in disagree. That's a hypothetical Arab-Israeli conflict, and I come here with in humility, because I don't normally come to the capital of Israel to speak about the Arab-Israeli conflict. But I do so for some reasons, in part because I am convinced that the Israeli government and people have lost their way. Because the U.S. government... Because the U.S. government is such a major factor, and I am a U.S. foreign policy analyst, I cringe when others say I'm a former State Department official, but it's true. And because so many other foreign analysts come to Jerusalem to tell you what they think, so why shouldn't I? My topic is Israel and clear victory, and I'd like to structure my topic around 4 terms: Arab rejectionism, lost country, victory, and change of heart. By Arab rejectionism, I point to what I see as the key to the conflict. It's not about Zionism, it's not about Jewish sovereignty. From 1911 forward, the first attack violence against Jews, or Zionism, in place, close to a century ago, it's been about Arab rejection of Zionism. The goal of rejectionism has changed over time. It once was a plain destruction, prevention and destruction, but now it's much more subtle. I call it elimination. In other words, the enemies of Israel don't necessarily want to destroy Tel-Aviv, they want to inherit Tel-Aviv. Israel's challenge is unique. Israel's challenge is multi-pronged. Ideology is no longer suitable today. It's racist and essential and so forth. I would argue to you, ladies and gentlemen, no, the contemporary state faces such an array of dangers. And I would go further in speaking as a historian, say that there is no state in history that has faced such an array of challenges. Now, the enemies of Israel have, over this past century, premised their enmity on different bases. My social theological book on this is Pan-Syrianism. From a century ago until 1945, the major ideological basis for rejecting Zionism, Jewish nationalism, was Pan-Syrianism, seeing this land as Southern Syria. It's not forgotten. But it was very important. Pan-Syrianism was the ideology. From 1945 to 1967 was Pan-Arabism, symbolized by Gamal Abdel Nasser. The first one would be symbolized by King Abdullah Jordan, second by President Nasser of Egypt. Pan-Arabism. The third was Palestinianism, the idea of the Palestinian state, symbolized by Yasser Arafat. That was from 1967 to 1987. And since 1987, increasingly, the main adversarial movement has been of the notion of the Muslim Ummah, so from southern Syria to part of from Greater Syria to Arab nation to Palestine to the Ummah, to part of the Muslim world, from Pan-Syrianism to Pan-Arabism. To Palestinianism, to jihad, jihad. But it hasn't always been jihad. It's always been existential, but it wasn't always jihad. In 1920, 1940, 1960, 1980, it wasn't really about jihad. It's now about jihad. It might change. So it could be a fifth variant on this same theme. But the constant has been a rejection of Israel as such, the Jewish state as such. What's striking is that throughout this period, from 1923 there has been a small but distinct and important minority of Palestinians who do accept Israel. The term of art that's given them is collaborators. I think Israelis might find another more benign term. That is the one that Florence University used. They've never been in power, but they've had a very important role. It was they who sold the land in the early days, and it was they who then and now are supplying intelligence. Why is it that there are so many terrorist incidents that work, that succeed? Because of those, some of those 20% who accept Israel as a Jewish state. That's very important. It's not all Palestinians. It's a major majority, but it's not all. That's number one, Arab rejection. Number two is lost country. From 1948, to start with the origins of the state of Israel, not before, from 1948 to 1993, for a 45-year period, the Israeli leaders had a stunning record of strategic insight and success. They saw victory as the goal. That is to say, Arab acceptance of Israel was the goal. And deterrence was the method to convince the enemy that he cannot go on, cannot prevail. This was achieved by establishing a reputation for toughness. Israel is tough. Ariel Sharon made his reputation in the 1950s with Unit 101. If Fedayeen came in from Egypt, Jordan, or Syria, the Egyptians, Jordanians, and Syrians heard from Ariel Sharon. And eventually they stopped the Fedayeen. That was the basic premise for that 45-year period, with some exceptions. It was an extraordinarily successful period for Israel. Went from the nascent weak state of 1948 to the powerful state of 1993. Went from the state that was assumed would be sucked out at birth to the state that was respected and feared in 1993. The state that was sucked out at birth to the state that The state of Israel was on its path to acceptance. War after war it won, but it never got full acceptance, nonetheless. It was moving in that direction. And I would guess that had the Israeli state continued with the policy of deterrence, by now we would see, 50 years afterwards, we would see pretty widespread Arab acceptance, particularly Palestinian acceptance of Israel, just because Israel is so strong, so determined, so determined. But the problem with deterrence is how it works. It is slow, it takes decades and decades. It is passive. It acknowledges that the key decisions of war and peace are made in Gaza and West Bank, in Cairo and Damascus, and so forth, not in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. It's expensive, all those soldiers under arms, and it's boring. And the Israeli people were inactive, a million people, and they wanted action. We got bored. 45 years and still going on. 1993 was the beginning of the dot-com boom and all those exciting things. Let's finish with this conflict, please. And so, in 1993, deterrence was brought out. And instead of victory, the new goal was resolution. Not victory, resolution. Finish with this conflict already. Convince the enemy to leave Israel alone. Make timely concessions in order to get the enemy to leave Israel. Have an active peace process, no longer waiting for the other side, doing something. This policy has a name. It's called appeasement. Now, appeasement has a bad odor because it didn't work in the 1930s with Hitler, and it didn't work in the 1970s with Brezhnev, and it didn't work in the 1990s with Arafat. So, right, it has a bad odor, but it's worth noting that appeasement did work for the British Empire from about 1860 to the 1920s. For example, the British had a problem with the United States over the border between Alaska and Canada. And the British, who had worldwide interests, appeased and gave the United States more than they really, the British really wanted to give, and it worked. The border was 70%. In other words, appeasement worked with the democratic state, appeasement worked with tribal leaders, appeasement does not work with brutal, thuggish, authoritarian, totalitarian leaders. But the Israeli policy from 1993 to 2000 was appeasement. Give in order to get out of the conflict, to avoid further war. It didn't work, and by 2000 it was clear it didn't work. And after 2000, for 6 years, to 2006, we saw a policy of unilateral withdrawals from Lebanon, Gaza, and was to be from the West Bank. The Lebanon war ended that, still that was the intention. And then since 2006, since the Lebanon war, we have a policy of confusion, passivity, and resolution, and who knows what. As symbolized the other day by $100 million going to Gaza. Somebody would like to explain that one to me?
Jizya.
Okay. So that's something to do with the country, Ross country. And we find that Israel today is without any election. And I might add that, from my point of view, the leading candidates for prime minister, none of them look like they're going to change this. Point three, word three, victory. The mistake in 1993 can be boiled down to one sentence, a sentence you probably will all remember. Yitzhak Rabin said time and again, you make peace with enemies, not with friends. You make peace with enemies, not with friends. I disagree. Disagree completely. I'd add one word. You make peace with former enemies. Former enemies. You first have to defeat your enemies. Victory of your enemy. That was the goal. USA was looking for victory, and then for the last 15 years has lost sight of victory, and in my view, should return to victory. Absolutely. There's a war. It's not terrorism. It's not occupation. It's war. And a war in which there are clearly defined war goals. The Israeli war goal is to win acceptance of the enemies. So they become former enemies. The Palestinian Arab Muslim leftist, call it what you will, the enemies of Israel, wish to eliminate the Jewish state. Not necessarily a state, but eliminate. So that it becomes a state of the citizens or a binational state or whatever it might be. It is no longer a sovereign Jewish state. It's no longer a Zionist state. It's no longer a culmination of the Zionist dream. Very clear. One seeks acceptance of the Jewish state. The other seeks the elimination of the Jewish state. These are irreconcilable goals. There is no mediation possible. There's no compromise possible. Either there is an Israel, Jewish sovereign Jewish state, or there is not. It is black and white, it is binary, it is raw, it is crude, and it is unchanged since 1948, or in some ways since 1911. It's there, and that's the conflict, that's the war. Now, wars end historically when one side gives up. It is fashionable to say the war solves nothing. But in fact, war solves a great deal. And the wars that really solve things are when one side gives up. And wars don't always lead to that. Many rounds of the Arab-Israeli conflict have not led to resolution. World War I did not lead to resolution. The Germans did not accept that they'd been defeated, and they wanted to try again. And they did. But in 1945, they accepted they were defeated, and that's over. So, what each side is looking for in this conflict is victory. Now, interestingly, the Palestinians, who are not strategically very sophisticated, understand this single point, victory. The Israelis, who are strategically very sophisticated, it's a very peculiar thing. War will continue so long as both sides believe they can win. It'll end when one side gives up. I experienced this personally as an American in 1975 when my country gave up. The United States didn't give up. We didn't lose because we're smaller than Vietnam, because we have a smaller economy, because we have a smaller arsenal. We lost because we no longer had the will to go on. It was a bitter experience. I remember a sleepless night, April 30, 1975, as I was absorbing the indignity, the humiliation of losing, of defeat. But we accepted it. And no one has ever said that we should go back and try again. We lost. We lost completely. It's over. Well, that is the way wars end. When one side gives in. And that's what the Palestinians are seeking. And that's what Israel is not seeking. And that's what I wish Israel would seek. As it is. Is that the Palestinians did in 1993 under White House law accept Israel. But they have grievances, occupation, poverty, alienation, and the like. Or that the U.S. government made mistakes, or the Israeli government made mistakes. Mine is that the Palestinians are feeling strong and optimistic. It's not a kind of occupation and despair. It's a matter of exhilaration and optimism. It's not an occupation. It's not Palestinian grievances. It's Palestinians' strength and ambition. And the policy implications of this are clear. The conventional view is that Israel needs to satisfy the Palestinians and make concessions to them. My view is that the Palestinians must accept Israel. The conventional view is that Israel must give, and my view is that Israel must win. The conventional view is that Israel must please the Palestinians. My view is that Israel must crush the will. Western states. No more aid to the Palestinians. No more recognition. No more pieces of paper. Pieces of paper can memorialize a solution, but they cannot create. No more discussion of final status. I don't want to hear about the disposition of the Temple Mount. Let's first see this war won, and then we'll figure out about the Temple Mount. Sessions. They serve no purpose. Israel's burden is to be time. Some kind of Oslo-type agreement, some horse trading, yeah, I'm against it in principle. But only after the Palestinians have come to accept Israel's existence. Now, from this point of view, I have a simple principle, but anything that encourages the Palestinians, and more broadly Arabs and Muslims, the enemies of Israel, to see Israel's weak and encouraged and exhilarated is a bad development, like Gaza. And anything that discourages them and makes them feel that they can't win is a positive development. How does one tell when the war is over? Well, when the Palestinians and Arabs and Muslims and others have, in a protracted, in a consistent way over a protracted period, not engaged in violence, not engaged in something, and not tried to take steps to eliminate Israel. When they show the disagreement with Israel, strong letters to the editor, to marshes, and so on. When the Jews of Hebron have no more need for security than the Arabs of Nazareth. When the maps in Arabic show Israel. So, I don't want to get into the details of how Israel should win. That's not my role. But it is to say that there's a profound misunderstanding of the nature of the conflict. There needs to be, this is my fourth, I kind of skip it, my fourth term is change of heart. There needs to be a change of heart on the part of the Palestinians. Israeli policy should be devoted to that. American policy, which is my role in this, is to encourage Israel not just to defend itself from being attacked, but to win. A wall is a good idea. Fine, no problem with it. To protect Israel from being Israelis from being assaulted. But the wall is not a solution. Hunkering down is not a solution. The wall is a tactic, it's a useful tactic, but it's not a strategic solution. You have to win. You can't win with the wall. In conclusion, the present situation is tragic in that everyone loses. The Israelis are being attacked. I gave that list. From the Iranian nuclear buildup to editorials around the world claiming that Israel is a part of the state. It is the only Western country that's forced on a daily basis to assert its existence through military force, intelligence, arrests, so and fighting boycotts, fighting for its ideology and the like. But interestingly and ironically, Israel is a thriving state. It gets hit. A state that works. It's a state with a buoyant culture and a, even these days, a pretty good economy, and a vibrant polity, and high tech second to none. Israel, despite this problem, is a successful functioning country. The Palestinians are not. They are more harmed, interestingly, by their own determination to eliminate Israel than is Israel. Palestinians, who are a skilled, dignified people, are prevented from modernizing. They're subject to dictatorship, poverty, affluence. These are the wretched results of their foul, irredentist goals. If they were to give up, they were to lose. Their wills would be crushed. Then they could make advances. They could begin to build their own polity, society, culture, and economy. But they can't do that so long as they're focused on harming Israel. Can't promise. So in sum, the Arabs must accept Israel before anything positive can happen. The Arab-Israeli conflict can end when the Palestinians do accept it. The former combatants will be liberated at that point. It will be good for both sides, not just for Israel, but also, interestingly, perhaps even more so, for the Palestinians.